biggest concern is around solitary confinement. At this point, when she was initially incarcerated, she was placed into solitary confinement. It's a really common practice that we see with transgender individuals. They know that there's folks on the outside watching. Once they know that actually they can't just disappear you very easily, and they know that somebody's going to be coming up to see you every week, and so if they give you a black eye, somebody's going to see it, and somebody's going to say something. Just making as much noise as possible to be able to send our love through those prison walls so that she can be feeling it. My name is Katie Burgess. I am the Executive Director of the Trans Youth Support Network, or TYSN, out in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where we work in coalition with the CC Support Committee.
And today is June 4th, and today was CC's sentencing. Could you tell folks a bit about what happened in court today?
So we saw Hennepin County continue on with their very, very aggressive approach to this case, and immediately motioned to have the time off or time served for CC be reduced by the amount of time that she had served on electronic home monitoring or house arrest. And of course, there's really just no reason for them to be going so aggressively after her at this point. They also motioned to increase the restitution from a little bit over $1,000 to a little bit over $6,000 to compensate for funeral costs of the deceased. Then they moved into some statements from some of Dean Schmitz's family, the deceased's family, and then we had some statements from some family and friends of Cece. And then Cece herself spoke briefly. There was some powerful statements made, and Cece herself really was very brave and very honest in the courtroom. And then the judge sentenced her to what we expected would happen, the 41 months. It will be in jail. We were hoping that it would actually be on house arrest, on electronic home monitoring, based on the fact that the Minnesota Department of Corrections doesn't have a legitimately safe facility for her as a transgender individual. We were hoping that she would be able to get transferred to serve the time at her home. That was not the case. The judge did sentence her to prison. With the reduced time off for time served.
I also spoke with Lex Horan from CC's support crew about her sentencing.
There weren't any major surprises that happened in the courtroom today. It was pretty much what we expected based on the plea agreement that CC accepted a month ago. But Judge Daniel Moreno sentenced her to 41 months in prison on a charge of second-degree manslaughter by negligence. So what that means, more or less, is that through time served, that is the time that she's already spent in jail over the past year, as well as with good behavior, we expect that she'll end up serving probably a little under 2 years. Again, no huge surprises. We had anticipated and hoped that the entire past year would count towards time served for Cece, including a period of time when she was under in-home monitoring. We understood that would be counted towards her time served. It turns out that the time that she was on home monitoring won't actually be counted towards time served, so she'll only have 275 days time served instead of 366. But I would say that was sort of the only thing that happened in the courtroom today that we didn't really expect.
Lex went on to clarify the plea agreement that Cece accepted.
I think a lot of people have had questions when they hear that Cece accepted a plea agreement or are sort of confused about what all this means. And I think it's just important to contextualize that that decision that Cece made in the broader context of what she was up against and how that paralleled so many other people's cases. Cece was facing a possible sentence of 4 years if she were convicted of the charges she was facing, which were 2 charges of second-degree murder. And she was facing, there's pretty much no possibility on the table that she would be judged by a jury of her peers. She was likely to have a majority white jury, and with, of course, no transgender people on it. And she's in a legal system where, you know, in Hennepin County, which is, the, you know, this county that we're in, upwards of 95% of cases resolve in plea deals. And so it's really a legal system that is built to extract plea deals from people because judges and lawyers don't want to go to court, and it tends to be an effective way to resolve cases out of court. And so Cece, you know, weighed her options and looked at what she was facing if she took her case to trial, and she found an option she could live with given the deep injustice that she was up against. And I think it's important to see that the prosecutor's office and the county attorney are trying to spin this as a victory for themselves, that this is a just resolution to the case. But if you look at what they were looking for a year ago, they really did want to put Cece away for 40 years, and it's a testament to Cece's fight and to her power and her spirit and to the community behind her that that the prosecution had to offer her this deal that is significantly less than what they were originally looking at. So I think it's important, even though there's a lot of media going out of the prosecutor's office about this being, you know, a fair resolution, that we only got to this point because of a huge campaign and a ton of pressure put on that office.
I asked Katie Burgess about the support that Cece had in court for her sentencing.
Yeah, we had an impressive crowd. We have not seen this many people pack in the courtroom yet. It was not only overflowing into the hallway itself was packed. It was hard to even move.
Lex also talked about the support that was there for Cece.
It was a really amazing turnout of support for Cece today. It was a really beautiful thing. The hearing was in a very small courtroom, and there was only room for about 15 people of Cece's family and supporters. And there was a crowd of, I would say, between 80 and 90 supporters who came out, just packing the hallway outside the courtroom, all wearing purple, which is the color Cece had chosen for her supporters to wear, or free honeybee t-shirts. Honeybee is Cece's nickname. And so it was a huge crowd of folks from really all different places all over. So it was folks who, you know, from all different parts of the Twin Cities, from the Trans Youth Support Network, which is an organization here in Minneapolis, folks from African-American communities, from queer communities, from, you know, lots of LGBT folks of color filling the courtroom and in the room. And it was really inspiring. There were a couple sort of national figures who were there as well. Mara Kiesling, who's the director of the National Center for Transgender Equality in Washington, D.C., as well as Leslie Feinberg, the renowned author and transgender activist. And it was just a really amazing moment to sort of see. I think that what we got to see in the courtroom and in the hallway outside the courtroom is one of the biggest victories that we can look to out of all of this, is the kind of folks who have come together and built community and support for Cece and around her case, that a lot of people were talking to each other and were together in the same space because of her, who didn't have relationships before. And I think that's one of the biggest victories that we can look to.
Katie Burgess spoke about the worldwide support that Cece's had and the ways that her communities are going to continue supporting her.
And we've just been, you know, hearing from Cece support committees from around the world, just kind of throwing out their solidarity, throwing fundraisers, doing different actions around the world. Tonight, out here in Minneapolis, 10 p.m., we're going to be doing a noise demonstration. We did this once before for Cece, the night that she took the plea, to just let her know that we love her no matter what. So we'll be out here again tonight just making as much noise as possible to be able to send our love through those prison walls so that she can be feeling it. And people aren't going anywhere. You know, there's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of work to do as she gets transferred into the state prison system. And everybody, you know, is excited to be taking the momentum of a lot of the coalitions that have been built around this case, a lot of the organizing that's happened around this. Just really excited to continue following Cece's lead. She's shown such remarkable leadership, such remarkable strength in her call for justice. And everybody is excited to just keep following her, stick with her. So we'll be making sure that she's, you know, as safe as possible as she gets transferred through the prison system. And be keeping a close eye on her, as well as just, you know, loving her up. You know, she'll have lots of friends and family going out to visit her and be in touch with her and be making sure that we continue to get her, you know, messages of faith, hope, and love out to the world.
That's great. And thanks for also talking a bit about ways that people are going to continue supporting her. I think that's really important, too.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about the conditions where she'll be after this?
So what it'll look like after here is she'll be transferred to the intake facility for the state prisons, which is in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And standard practice for transgender inmates is that there's an ad hoc transgender committee comprised of administrative officials, a few healthcare officials, a couple of wardens, and some other folks get together basically to discuss the inmate on a few different levels. So there's the issue of typically the two main issues are placement and hormones. Never is somebody placed into a facility based on their gender identity. And never are they allowed to have a say in which facility they feel safest in. What will typically happen is a review of that person's physiology, their sexual orientation, and their prior placement, should they have a record of prior placement. And, you know, that's problematic for many reasons.
yeah, absolutely.
And, We're expecting to see Cece go to St. Cloud, go through this intake process, and be placed into a men's facility, most likely a facility in either Faribault or Moose Lake, Minnesota. And then because she already has she's being allowed to access her hormones in the facility she's at now at the county level, we're expecting for her to continue to be accessing her hormones at a state level. You know, our biggest concern is around solitary confinement. At this point, when she was initially incarcerated, she was placed into solitary confinement. It's a really common practice that we see with transgender individuals because there is this, you know, lack of, you know, motivation to respectfully and safely house really any inmate, but it's particularly increased when we're looking at transgender inmates. And so people just throw them into solitary confinement because they don't want to deal with that issue. The first and foremost thing we're going to be watching is where she's going to get placed when she goes to St. Cloud, is if she's going to be placed in solitary confinement or not.
I asked Lex about Cece's history of being placed in solitary confinement.
I believe at two different points while she was in jail, was placed in solitary confinement against her will. And that's a pretty common thing that happens to transgender people when they're in prisons or jails, is that the prison officials say for their own safety and the safety of other prisoners, trans folks need to be in solitary confinement. And most of the time, that's not actually where trans people feel safest. You're obviously denied any privileges that other prisoners have, limited as even those are, and denied contact with other people, and are at increased risk of abuse by prison staff, which is a really real thing. And so we are concerned about that. And, you know, if Cece is placed in solitary against her will, we'll certainly engage in that kind of mobilization again to try to, you know, pressure the prison to release her from solitary. And also, I mean, I think that the broader, but, you know, we don't want to have to do that. And it's clear that all of the organizations that have expertise around this and all of the transgender folks who have been fighting these fights within prisons for so long say over and over and over again that if trans people are going to be in prison, you need to place them where they feel safest, and that having a blanket policy around classifying trans people in prison based on genitalia, which is the status quo in most places, and also placing trans people in solitary, even when it's under the name of keeping trans people safe, doesn't do that. And there was actually recently the Department of Justice released federal guidelines for the U.S. for as part of their federal guidelines around stopping rape and sexual violence inside prisons, had quite a bit of discussion of those federal guidelines of how to treat transgender prisoners. There's a lot of input on those guidelines from the Sylvia Rivera Law Project in New York City, which is a legal organization that works with transgender people there. And those guidelines were very explicit that solitary confinement should never be used unwillingly for trans people and shouldn't be the default. And so there's a lot out there demonstrating that that's a dangerous thing to do. And so we really hope that that will not happen in CC's case, but if it does, we're obviously ready to fight for something different for her.
I also asked Lex about how folks can continue to support CC.
So as soon as we have the information about where she's going to be, folks should definitely start sending her letters, sending her books. Up on the website, there will be a list of books that CC's requesting, as well as the way to get in touch with her once she is transferred. And I know she's just had letters pouring in, and I think it means so much to her. And I think beyond that, it's expensive to be in prison. and so donating to her support fund will help put money on her commissary so she can make sure to have the food she needs and sort of just her basic needs met while she's in prison, as well as money on her phone account so she can talk to the people that she loves, which is really expensive when you're in prison, and also to make sure that her family can be making trips to whatever facility she's being held at. So throw a fundraiser in your community, gather whatever resources you're able to, and that's another really important way to support her. And then I think the last thing is a little broader than that, and is all along CC has said that she's in this fight for herself and also for other people who are facing the kind of violence outside in the streets and in the courtroom that she's faced throughout this, and she doesn't ever want this to happen to somebody else. And unfortunately, we know that this kind of thing happens every day. And so just continuing to tell CC's story, but also to contextualize it and to tell it within the broader systems of mass incarceration and violence against trans folks, in particular trans women of color, and fight those fights in your own communities, wherever they may appear, you know.
Katie also spoke about the ways that CC's community will continue supporting her and the ways that transgender prisoners are invisibilized.
So then from there, we'll just, myself, several supporters, lots of her family, we'll be commuting out to St. Cloud as much as possible. She'll probably be there for about a month before being transferred to whichever other facility she'll be spending the duration of her sentence in. And so we'll be keeping a close eye. And that goes a long way. You know, as soon as folks within the county facility knew that there was people watching, the ways that she was treated, you know, it just did a 180. You know, it's like it's very easy to, you know, transgender individuals face such extreme isolation, and it's very easy for us to just be kind of disappeared on a lot of levels of our society. But when it comes to prisons, it's so much easier. You know, already we don't really pay attention to what's happening in prisons. Nobody, you know, it's very hard for inmates to communicate with the outside world. It's very difficult for people to be aware of conditions within prisons. And with transgender inmates, that's just kind of like twofold. You know, to be able to even be identified as trans, you need to self-identify to the administration or to a healthcare, you know, whether that's a deputy or whether that's medical staff or whoever. And that's going to put you at a distinct place of risk, considering the statistics around, harassment, abuse, sexual assault of transgender inmates at the hands of staff and administration. So, you know, it's difficult to, you know, even have, you know, to be able to have any kind of voice as a transgender individual. And it's very easy for staff and administration to just kind of, like, perpetuate that disappearing of you. And so once they know that there's folks on the outside watching, once they know that actually they can't just disappear you very easily, and they know that somebody's going to be coming up to see you every week, and so if they give you a black eye, somebody's going to see it, and somebody's going to say something. More often than not, that's not the case with a lot of transgender inmates, and you're sitting in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day. Nobody's, either people aren't coming to visit you, or your connections on the outside are, aren't able to come to see you, aren't able to communicate with you because of all the barriers that are there, you know, and those abuses are allowed to continue. So with CC, you know, it's really just so important for people to continue watching. Like you said, it's really important that the support isn't going away. And that's real. It's so important that people keep paying attention to what's happening to CC and to incarcerated individuals everywhere, but particularly transgender individuals who it's so easy to disappear into the system.
Finally, I asked Katie if there's any kind of mail that CC would be particularly excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll post the address for where to send things. As soon as we know, people should hold off on mailing things probably for about a week for the transfer to happen. She is an avid fashion designer and an amazing organizer. So those are the two things that I typically tell people to shoot for. Like I remember one day I walked in and she was clutching to her chest this book from Teen Vogue, and she was like, "Meet my new best friend." Anything fashion related, she just eats up in a heartbeat. She'll send us sketches of designs that she makes. Before she went in, she was in school for fashion design. It's really her main jam is that kind of stuff. And then also, she's really coming of age as an organizer. I think she wants to be looking to the folks who have come before her. And so she's also gotten... me and her have talked to UEP Newton Reader, and she would really like to see that kind of stuff. So people who have some lessons to teach for her as an organizer, as somebody who's a leader, you know, because she was doing this work before all this happened, but not at this level, you know. She was obviously not expecting any of this in her life. She was trying to go to the grocery store, you know.
Yeah.
This all happened, but... she's really taken it in stride. She really has really come into it, has never once, really hesitated to take up the leadership. And so I think some literature to kind of support her in that journey is appreciated as well.
Last night following CC's sentencing, hundreds of people gathered outside the Hennepin County Public Safety Facility. Leslie Feinberg, transgender activist and renowned author, was arrested and charged with property damage. Hundreds of CC McDonald supporters took to the streets, blocking traffic for over an hour in protest of the violent abuses that CC has faced at the hands of the legal system. Feinberg joined demonstrators in making noise loud enough to be heard within the prison where CC is currently being held, and marching through the streets in a show of love and solidarity with CC McDonald and all incarcerated individuals. Feinberg was the only person arrested and is excited to draw more attention to McDonald's story and the prevalent racism and transphobia within the criminal system. Leslie Feinberg gave the following statement.
Many people across the United States and around the world are watching, and history will record what happens on June 4th, 2012. CC McDonald survived a fascist hate crime, and now she's sentenced as she struggles to survive an ongoing state hate crime. As Martin Luther King Jr. reminded, never forget that everything Hitler did in Germany was legal. As a white, working-class, Jewish, transgender, lesbian revolutionary, I will not be silent as this injustice continues. I know from the lessons of history what it means when the state, in a period of capitalist economic crisis, enacts apartheid passbook laws, rounds up and deports immigrant workers, and gives a green light to white supremacist fascist attacks on black peoples. From Sanford, Florida, to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to a courtroom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The prosecutor and judge are upholding the intent of the infamous white supremacist Dred Scott ruling of 1857. The same year, Frederick Douglass concluded, "Without struggle, there is no progress."
Check out supportcc.wordpress.com to stay updated. I'm Carly Forbes reporting for Earful of Queer and Guelph Prison Radio.